You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 433 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this fine Wednesday evening. And joining me for the first time in a while, he was on vacation, he's back, and it's been a little bit. Jeff Siegel, what's up, man?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm all right. You and I talk all the time, which I guess people probably assume that, but you're sort of my right hand over at Peachtree Hoops, so we talk all the time, but you did like a two-week vacation trip around the world. Not really around the world, but a long way away, and we haven't talked about stuff in a while, so nice to have you back. Plenty to talk about, I guess. The biggest thing that, I guess, news-wise, we have to hit on, there's not really a basketball takeaway, but the Hawks have a new venue name, I suppose, is the best way to put that. Phillips Arena is no more, at least as of October 20th, I think, is the grand opening. The Hawks announced earlier on Wednesday that they've entered into a 20-year agreement with State Farm to sponsor the arena. No big surprise here, but as someone who doesn't live here but who has lived here in the past, do you have a reaction to State Farm Arena?
I mean, it's a little weird. It'll be very strange to go to the stadium and talk about it and say, because it's just sort of natural to say, yeah, we're going down to Phillips for the game. It's something that, obviously, when I lived in Atlanta for a few years while I was covering the team, that was the thing. You didn't say you were going down to see the Hawks. It was always, oh, I'm going to Phillips tonight. I can't do whatever else I was supposed to do. You know, it was always Phillips. So I think from that perspective, it'll be a little weird at the outset.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that'll be a quick transition because I'll have to say it so often that it won't be too terribly weird. But, you know, there were some questions that I got. I want to clarify at least one thing here. The original Phillips Arena deal was 20 years. And it was as a result of that, the building opened in 1999 after the, sort of replaced the Omni, and the Hawks have played there ever since then. But the deal is basically ending early, and I'm not, you know, the Hawks are not going to necessarily release that kind of specific information about the contract with Phillips, but it was supposed to run through at least this season into 2019, so they're definitely ending that early. It does make some sense to do that considering they just did this massive renovation, got all this public money, and they want to sort of kick things off with a new name, and I totally understand that, and that was sort of common knowledge around the team for a while that Phillips was not going to be renewing, it was going to be somebody else, so I'm not surprised by any of it. The timing is a little bit weird, and they clearly are going ahead with it for this year. They're already sort of putting up signage and setting out pictures and all that fun stuff. It's going to be happening right away. So we at least want to clarify that. Also, there's some reporting out there from Zach Klein originally, and the AJC has been on this as well. The Hawks are actually taking a little bit less money actually on an annual basis. The original deal with Phillips was 20 years and $185 million. And this new deal is reported to be 20 years and $175 million. The Hawks, of course, do not announce this kind of stuff publicly, but I wasn't surprised by that either. And it's something that I think people assume that, you know, 20 years later, you're going to get more money. But what people don't really realize is that Phillips Arena deal was kind of an outlier. It was, even still 20 years later, one of the biggest naming rights deals in the country of any kind of venue like this. They really got a big-time overpay from Phillips at the time. So credit the Hawks for that. They've been collecting on that for a while. But at the time, also, it was the Hawks and the Thrashers in the building, and the Thrashers have been gone for a while now. People sort of forget that it was two teams as well. So I was not surprised by that. But, I mean, you have some law background, all that fun stuff. Did any of that stuff surprise you? Because people really asking me, like, wait, I thought that was supposed to be more money, and it's not. It's actually a little bit less.
Yeah, I mean, and certainly when you factor in the inflation from 1999, right, it's even a lot less.
It's a lot less, yeah.
It is interesting to see it go down. You know, you have to think that wrestler would at least want it to be even, or, you know, somewhere in the same neighborhood, just so he doesn't take basically the PR hit from everybody going, how could they get less money 20 years later? But, you know, I think, you know, like you said, if it was an outlier in 99 and now, you know, sort of the that sort of market has changed, obviously, because the Thrashers are gone, that's 41 extra home games for the arena to host that isn't being hosted now. So they've got to fill it with, you know, concerts and other things. And certainly it makes more sense that they weren't able to get, you know, a great, you know, an outlier deal like the previous one.
Yeah, for sure. I don't want to do too much on this. It's just a situation where that was obviously the big news of the day, and they had Trae Young and John Collins and Kent Bazemore and all these guys out at the announcement. The mayor of Atlanta was in the building, Keisha Lance Bottoms. So there was a lot going on there, sort of a pomp and circumstance day with Bob Rathbun hosting. I was not there, by the way. I had day job responsibilities, but I got to watch a little bit of it on the replay over at Fox Sports Go. And yeah, a lot of fun stuff there. We'll talk about it. If there's any more information, we'll talk about it. But it's not really basketball related, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. Okay, we can move on to the other central topic of the day. And that's on the previous podcast, which I would definitely encourage everyone to go back and listen. A friend of the program, Tim Cato of The Athletic, came on to talk about the Dallas Mavericks. For obvious reasons, the Hawks have a vested interest in the Mavs this year because the Mavs owe the Hawks a top five protected pick. And apparently, there was actually a lot of reaction to what Tim said. I like Tim. Tim's a friend of mine. Tim is higher on the Mavs than I am. He thought that about 40 wins was sort of like a baseline projection for the Mavs, and I think I'm a little bit lower than that. A lot of the fan base was lower than that, and they told me about it. So that gave me an idea to talk to you about sort of the entire bottom of the league right now. Granted, it is late August, so a lot of this stuff can change. But before we get into some other teams, where are you at on the Mavs right now? Because that's sort of I know the Cavs are out there, but the Mavs are the new focus for Hawks fans, I think. And that top five protected pick is a kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I think 40, especially as like a baseline where like that minimum expectation would be 40 wins, that's a little strong for me. You know, certainly, I think my minimum I expect them to be comfortably ahead of the rest of the team, sort of at the bottom, because of the addition of DeAndre Jordan. I expect Luka Doncic to be able to step in and play better than most rookies. You know, your expectations of rookies shouldn't be very high. Obviously, last year changed a little bit of that because that rookie class was so good. But you know, in general, I think rookies are not quite as impactful on the court, but of all of the rookies, Doncic, you know, because he's been playing professionally for so long overseas, he might be able to step in and provide a little bit more value in year one. But, you know, and you look around the rest of their team, Wesley Matthews, Harrison Barnes, you expect them to be able to put up points at the minimum and probably defend at a pretty high level now that DeAndre Jordan's there. And they'll have some really interesting lineup combinations that they can throw out as you know, because Doncic can play the point guard position, you know, and he's so big, they can throw out a lot of like basically four wings and DeAndre. And still retain, you know, a real point guard in Doncic. So, you know, I think that they're, you know, I think a baseline, you know, close to 40 makes sense. I mean, it certainly, you know, in the maybe 34 to 35 range would probably be if everybody can stay healthy, especially, you know, some of the guys like Wes Matthews who's had some injury issues in his career. If everybody stays healthy and Doncic sort of is what he is, you know, 34, 35 wins would make sense as a minimum, and 40 wins, you know, wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I think 40 is within the range of outcomes. You know, actually, I was talking to a good friend of the program, Tyler Jones, offline about this. I think he would not mind me sharing. He's lower on the Mavs than even I am, for sure. I think a lot of it comes down to Dennis Smith. If you think Dennis Smith's going to be the player that he was as a rookie, Dallas won't be very good this year because he was pretty bad as a rookie. I still like Dennis Smith, but, you know, the efficiency of him and all that fun stuff as a rookie was pretty ugly. I think Dallas is better this year on paper than they were last year. I know they only won, well, I think, 24 games last year, but they had a 33-win point differential. I think that's probably closer to where they were. It's probably like a 30-win team last year, all things considered. And then you add Luka, who I do think will help them a little bit. They lost some shooting. I think Yogi Ferrell was actually pretty good for them off the bench, for instance, and they had McDermott for a minute. But, you know, adding DeAndre, they have some competent players. Not a ton of shooting. I don't love their, you know, overall decisions. This is not a Mavs podcast. It really only matters for our purposes, at least today, about this coming season. And I think, you know, 40 is on the high end for me. I think I'd probably put them, like, my expectation for them probably in the 36 range, somewhere like that. And if they can do that, that should be enough to avoid the bottom five, which is kind of all that matters if you're a Hawks fan. I know it would be ideal for the Hawks to get the sixth pick or the seventh pick. I think if you're a Hawks fan, you just want Dallas to convey that pick. That's probably the most important thing. Just get it out of the way. Get a lottery pick from them. I'd be pretty surprised if Dallas made the playoffs. I mean, is there a chance that Dallas just goes crazy and makes the playoffs? I guess it's not impossible, but I'd be pretty stunned if that happened.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't seem likely. It would take sort of a catastrophic group of injuries from, you know, how many teams above them? At least three.
Well, yeah,
or four.
I mean, a lot of that plus like Luka being incredible and Dennis Smith taking a big leap. I think all that.
Yeah, Dennis Smith would have to. you know, discover a jump shot, and Luka would have to step in and be Luka Doncic from EuroLeague immediately. There's a lot that would have to happen. It's possible, you know, it's within the 100% range of outcomes, but it's the 95th percentile or higher that they make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you. So I think, you know, I want to talk about a little bit about the teams that are sort of in contention with the Mavs. Off the top of your head here, or wherever your notes will be, how many teams do you think are worse than the Mavs right now?
Well, Atlanta for sure is one of them. They're, you know, obviously, you know, attempting to be bad. You know, Brooklyn.
And by the way,
is...
I will say there is a scenario in which Atlanta is better than Dallas, but again, it's one of those unlikely scenarios. It's like we were talking about a second ago. I think if the Hawks kept everybody all year and tried to win every game, and Trey's not bad, they could be better than Dallas. But I think the baseline has to be that Dallas is better.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that would take both things happening. I think Dallas would have to really disappoint. Maybe they have some injuries or just whatever happens, it doesn't gel on their end. And then Atlanta would have, you know, Trae Young would have to be that, you know, 95th percentile Trae Young. Where
and
he's,
same with Torian and John and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there would have to be all the young guys would take a big step forward. Trae Young would be, you know, ready to compete immediately. Deadman, you know, sticks around all year. Bazemore doesn't get bought out or traded or anything like that. You know, everybody sort of buys in. Lloyd Pierce comes in and just reinvigorates the team, and all of a sudden they're defending at a high level, which, you know, all of these things are possible individually. Having all of them happen in the same season seems, you know, rather unlikely. You just stack the probabilities on top of each other, and it doesn't seem to make a ton of sense, but it's possible, and so certainly – you know, certainly Dallas could be the worst team in the league, but if we're talking about, you know, sort of average median outcomes, that, you know, you have to say that Atlanta is probably going to be worse.
For sure. All right, with that out of the way, who else do you think is worse? I think there are multiple teams in addition to the Hawks who I would have worse, but who else do you have worse than Dallas?
You know, I definitely have Sacramento and Chicago and Orlando and Phoenix, even though I like what they've done. You know, and then you're getting into teams like Charlotte. Cleveland is worse. New York is worse. So, you know, there's comfortably, you know,
that's
seven
already. Yeah.
Or right there with the Mavs, you know, right there underneath the Mavs. And then you're even, you know, at the top of their outcomes, you're even getting into teams like Detroit, where, you know, you're not 100% sure whether, you know, if Detroit can get their act together with Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond, are they going to be better than Dallas? So, you know, I expect that they will be. I expect that Dallas will fall with, you know, right in that 36, 37 win range, like you're saying. But that's comfortably, I mean, so if we're just looking at it, Brooklyn, Atlanta, Sacramento, Memphis, Chicago, Orlando is six, Phoenix and Cleveland and New York makes nine right there. And yeah, so that's so. Those are all teams that I would expect to be worse than Dallas. And, you know, so there's, you know, that means Dallas would be the 10th pick maybe in the draft. That also means Cleveland is, you know, right in there, 8, 9, 10 as well. So, you know, there's a lot to look for, especially on lottery night as things move around for the Hawks.
Yeah, I mean, with all that said, I mean, there are obviously teams on that list that could be better than Dallas this year. But I think confidently I will say the Knicks, the Nets, the Magic, the Hawks, and the Kings – those five, I think, are solidly worse on paper. And then you have teams that I think probably are worse in Phoenix. And you have, you know, I will say I'm not a huge fan of the Bulls. I'm not a huge fan of what the Cavs have done. I think and we'll talk about them in a second. But yeah, I think you're definitely talking about a scenario where my baseline expectation would be that the pick conveys. It is not impossible that it doesn't, especially because you have to throw in the possibility that Dallas is going to be in the lottery and they could also jump into the top three. That also matters. It's not like, you know, it's not a zero sum game where they have to be one of the five worst teams in the league to get the pick. You have to remember that there's probabilities involved where they have the ability to jump into the top three. So that's something to be said for that as well. But I think, again, you know, baseline expectation wise, Dallas should convey the pick this year. Again, I understand there's like this delicate balance where Hawks fans don't want the 12th pick. They'd rather have the 6th pick. But at the end of the day, get the pick. It's kind of all that matters, honestly. And I'll be saying that all year. I'm sure in March and April we'll be trying to, you know, concoct scenarios where it's perfect for the Hawks. But at the end of the day, just don't be terrible and don't make the playoffs, basically.
Yeah, and Dallas, they're doing the top four picks this year because they changed the lottery
form.
But if they're the 9th pick, you know, that's a very, very small chance, about roughly 20% chance that they jump into the top four, which, you know, it's not impossible because they flatten the odds in such a big way that they jump from nine to the top four and then they get to keep that pick. So, you know, you are looking at it, you know, even if they're 10th, you know, they've got about what looks like about a 15 to 16% chance of keeping that pick. So it's not, you know, certainly it's not impossible for a team, you know, in that 9, 10, 11 range to jump into the top four.
Oh, yeah, there is no question that on lottery night, both with Dallas and potentially Cleveland as well, Hawks fans will be sweating in addition to their own pick because of the fact that, you know, all the flattened odds, and I have to remember that every time I talk about this too. I'm just so ingrained to talk about the old system, but the new system is going to be not great, honestly, for the Hawks in terms of getting these picks from Dallas and Cleveland because the risk is just higher this year than it's been for those teams to jump into the top four. So something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's, you know, the Hawks, if they have the very worst, you know, if they're the worst team in the league, they have a 48% chance of picking fifth
as the worst team in the league.
Like, it's nuts how flat things are and how they're really, you know, it doesn't benefit you as much as it has in the past to tank, other than the fact that Atlanta cannot fall further than fifth if they're the worst team in the league.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I am not as convinced as some that the Hawks are going to tank super hard. I've said this on the podcast before, but I don't think the Hawks want to be abjectly terrible. Part of that's marketing, and part of that is also the fact that the incentive just isn't as big as it used to be now. You know, going along with what you said, their 48% chance to finish fifth in the lottery as the best team. They have about a 60% chance to not be in the top three. If you have the worst record in the league, best odds in the lottery, you're more likely to be outside the top three than you are inside the top three, which is just wild to consider. So a lot of sweating when we talk about that night in mid-May when there's lots of scenarios in the wind for the Hawks.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, as just to go back to whether they're going to really sort of tank or not, I don't think, you know, just looking at some of the teams around them and how a lot of the teams around them did try to get better this offseason, I'm not sure it's going to matter whether they try to tank or not. It's not going to be I wouldn't think that it's going to be a situation where in February they're telling, you know, that Schlenk is going to come down and tell Pierce, you know, we're not going to play Deadman and we're not going to play these guys. Like, they're going to be fine. They're going to lose enough games on their own to solidify one of those top picks, I think.
Yeah, it's more about really March and April. We saw that last year, even when there was a few nights when it was clear the Hawks were not trying their best to win in terms of, you know, rotations and guys taking nights off and that stuff. And there's just less incentive to do that now. I mean, the top three teams have basically the same odds in the top four. The bottom three teams. It's going to be, yeah, we'll have plenty of time to talk about lottery scenarios, but it's going to be there's less incentive, let's just say that, for teams to be as bad as they possibly could be for the upcoming season. That's probably enough on Dallas. I spent most of the podcast on Dallas, and we just talked about it some more. Shouts to Tim Cato. I promise I'm not trying to throw Tim under the bus. I like Tim. I think Tim is very smart. He covers the Mavs very well, but we're a little lower on them, so don't panic and don't think that I want the Mavs to win 50 games this season. The other team I wanted to ask you about is the Cavs, and I plan to spend more time on the Cavs later on with the podcast. I have a Cavs-based guest lined up later on in the offseason, but since we're talking about all this stuff now, it's a good time to hit on them. That's a trickier one because, A, it's top 10 protected, so inherently it's more unlikely to convey, and B, I think you and I are not that close on Cleveland. We talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago. I wonder if anything's changed between us two. So I want you to start and talk about what you think about the Cavs, because there are differing opinions on Cleveland right now, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are super low on them, and I'm just not. Like, I feel like Kevin Love is going to recapture whatever Minnesota Kevin Love is left. I think they're, you know, as an offensive team, it wouldn't surprise me if they don't really skip a beat, you know, especially during the regular season when on both ends of the floor, they had, you know, a lot of effort issues last year. And I don't think now that it's not like a free cakewalk to the finals every year, like it has been the last four, they're going to have to put some effort in the regular season, and it's going to show. And I feel like, you know, running an offense through Love at the elbows, and they have some decent talent around him. You know, you give a guy like George Hill a little bit more of the ball consistently. You know, we saw what he could do in Sacramento a little bit before he moved to Cleveland, that he he's still, you know, he's still a solid starting point guard when you give him the ball every time down. And that sort of the role, you know, he's envisioned as this 3-and-D point guard who can stand in the corner, but he did thrive with the ball in his hands a little more in Sacramento. As bad as Sacramento were when he was on the team, his individual numbers were quite good from what I remember. And so I expect, you know, I do expect them to contend for the playoffs and maybe finish with the, you know, 11th or 12th worst record in the league.
Yeah, I mean, you're higher on them than I am. I do think it's possible that pick conveys. At this moment, I would guess that it doesn't. I sort of understand where you're coming from there. I think there might be a point in time. And look, right now, it looks like the Cavs are going to try all season long. Dan Gilbert looks like he's going to try to win. The thing is, if you factor in the risk there when it comes to the Cavs, like if they struggle early, they're going to pull the ripcord, I'm pretty sure, at some point, because they know they need this pick. They don't have a ton of young assets on this roster at this moment. They do have Colin Sexton, but aside from that, you know, the guys who we like as players are generally a little bit older. So yeah, it's a situation where it might be on paper a situation where they're around number 10, somewhere in there. But they do have the incentive more so than Dallas. And that was the one thing that Tim said on the podcast that I agreed with, is that Dallas wants that pick to convey. I think Cleveland wants to make the playoffs, but if it's clear that they're not going to make the playoffs, they have more incentive to lean into it and maybe want to keep the pick a little bit. Plus, the big question for me is how much they're going to give the ball to Colin Sexton, because as you mentioned earlier, as I've mentioned over and over again, and rookie guards and especially rookie point guards are bad in general. I think Colin Sexton has an interesting potential to be a solid starting point guard in the league, but I think as a rookie, he's not going to be very good. So if they give him the ball and kind of let him go a little bit, that could hurt them as well. So I could see a lot of different scenarios with the Cavs. It's kind of all over the place. It would not blow me away if they finished with, you know, 36, 38 wins and finished 12th. With a 12th worst record, and that allows them to maybe keep that pick. The Hawks to get that pick. It wouldn't blow me away if they suddenly won 29 games and the Hawks had never had a chance to get that pick. It's kind of a situation where, you know, 7 wins may not seem like a lot, but 7 wins makes all the difference here, especially when you're talking about a top 10 pick versus top 5.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And certainly if they had, you know, a bad first 2 months, 2.5 months,
they should punt at that point.
Right. Then you start hearing, you know, the Kevin Love trade rumors. He'll be trade eligible in late January through, of course, the trade deadline in early February, even though he just signed that extension. It'll be 6 months in late January, roughly. So he'll be trade eligible. And you know, of course, George Hill will have some trade talks around him because he's not guaranteed for next year. Same with J.R. Smith. Same with Kyle Korver. You know, you could see them cut bait with a lot of their veterans, you know, before the trade deadline, and then give the keys to Colin Sexton, and all of a sudden that's a 25-win team, perhaps. You know, certainly if they bank some wins early, then you can see them sort of, if they're fighting in the 6, 7, 8 seed with Washington, with Miami, with Detroit, with some of those, you know, bottom end Eastern Conference playoff teams, then I do expect them to go for it. And I expect them to go for it at the beginning of the year and just sort of see how those first couple months go.
Yeah, it's a really tough one, I think, is probably the name of the game here. Cleveland is better than some. I mean, we mentioned all the teams that we think are worse than Dallas. Do you think Cleveland is better or worse than Dallas?
I think they're, oh man,
wins wise, because it's always tricky.
Wins
wise,
I think they're better because they play in the Eastern Conference.
I was about to say that. Yeah, that's a big thing to keep in mind, is that the West is obviously a lot better than the East. So, you know, you could think that Cleveland is worse than Dallas on paper, and I think I probably do, maybe. It's tough. They're kind of close for me. But
I think Love
wins,
is the best player in that series. So, like, if they played a 7-game series, I think I would pick the Cleveland Cavaliers, just because.
I mean, they have the best player.
Yeah, they have the best player in the series. They have, you know, their team makes sense because it's, you know, such a holdover from last year. You know, you can see how the team plays. Dallas is sort of, they've got so many new pieces and so many key pieces at important positions that you don't know exactly how they're going to do, like Doncic, like Dennis Smith, who was secretly one of the worst players in the league last year. DeAndre Jordan's brand new to the team. How is he going to gel with Rick Carlisle? Like, there's a lot of questions about Dallas, you know, sort of from where we are right now in August, that, you know, we'll have answers to by December, but I'd like to see it from them first in a way that we've at least, we know a little more about what the Cavaliers are at their best because of Love and because of Hill and Smith and Tristan Thompson. And, you know, they can throw out a veteran lead and lineup that makes sense at least.
Yeah, just as an NBA fan, like, take the Hawks out of it. I'm actually really intrigued to see what Cleveland looks like without LeBron because it's basically the same team. I mean, they add Colin Sexton, but they keep basically everybody else. So I kind of want to know what a team like that looks like when you just remove LeBron. They were always really bad without LeBron. Even when they had Kyrie, they were bad without LeBron. But that was more of a team that was built for LeBron. And now they've had the whole offseason to go in and realize they don't have LeBron coming and sort of, I guess, you know, Ty Lue could design a system around Kevin Love. I'm not the biggest Ty Lue fan in the world, but at the same time, I think he can at least plan for it now, and we'll see what that looks like. So, yeah, I'm intrigued as an NBA fan, and then, of course, there's the Hawks angle as well. So I can't remember a lot of situations recently where a team, especially in a team in a rebuild, had this many draft considerations in the same class. Of course, Atlanta has their own pick, which they obviously want to be very high. And then you throw in the fact that they were worried about this top five pick and this top 10 pick. Nothing is secure other than their own pick. They could end up with one pick, two picks, or three picks. And it's just a lot of moving parts, and it's great for content. I mean, you and I will have plenty to talk about and write about in March and April, but even for a team that's bad, but it just doesn't make for a lot of certainty, which is tough.
Yeah, it's difficult. You know, certainly it's nice in this specific circumstance that, you know, the way the lottery order comes, the lottery comes and then the draft and then free agency, because certainly if they had to do free agency and then know what the lottery results were and then have the draft, it would be very, you know, this is sort of a just more of a thought exercise than anything, but it would be very difficult for them to operate their offseason if they had to do that before the draft or before the lottery odds come out. So, you know, I think it's, you know, they're going to be fine. It's going to be, you know, they have the guys who they want under contract for this season, and then they'll see where the lottery odds come. There's really nothing that they can do about it between now and then, and there are no decisions to be made between now and then that really would affect anything, whether they get one pick or three. So, you know, I don't think that Schlenk is particularly worried about it, and his staff. I don't think that they're, you know, going to be obsessively looking at the standings and trying to figure out whether they have three picks or one pick and how that affects how they operate next season. I think it'll be pretty much, you know, they have their 15 guys, and maybe Thomas Robinson, you know, jumps up and takes one of the spots, but, you know, it's doubtful at this point. So, you know, I'm not sure that it really changes anything between now and May, but it certainly will. You know, it certainly, once May hits, it'll change everything for the Hawks going forward.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, there's been a lot of intriguing drafts in the last few years, but 2019 is going to be one to circle, to be sure. And you mentioned Thomas Robinson. That's something we get a lot of questions on. I know you were sort of gone when that hit. Do you have opinions on Thomas Robinson before I let you get out of here? Because I love him irrationally. I've said this on many platforms at the same time. He's a non-guaranteed contract on a team that has 15 guaranteed contracts in two ways. So all indications are that he's on the outside looking in, but maybe you think there's a path for him to stick around.
I mean, if it were me making the decision, I think he would just take Tyler Dorsey's spot, and we could all move on from the Tyler Dorsey experience. But Schlenk drafted Dorsey just last year.
The fans are not going to like that, Jeff. Tyler Dorsey has many, many fans. They're not going to like this.
He does, and certainly he shoots the ball, and sometimes it goes in, or most of the time it doesn't, and that's his only skill. And it's not like Robinson is a world beater. It's not like he's going to be an all-star, but at least he. I don't know. I've gotten past the Tyler Dorsey. The Tyler Dorsey experience has weighed on me in a way that I would like to see them go with Robinson over Dorsey. I don't think they will because of the politics of it, because, you know, Dorsey's already guaranteed, and Schlenk, you know, that's one of Schlenk's guys, one of his first two draft picks last year. So it's not, I don't expect it, but that would be what I would do with Robinson, assuming that he shows in preseason and in training camp that he can play, that he can do, you know, anything more than just, you know, be a rebound machine. Because that's still his calling card. That's still something that he does.
He's an absolutely elite rebounder.
Right. Which is,
that's basically it.
if you have to have one elite skill, rebounding transfers well from team to team and is sort of a nice thing to have. It's not, it's not something that you can build a career off of, obviously, because he's found that out pretty quickly. That there's not a whole lot of money out there for guys who can rebound and that's all they can do. But you know, you could see a situation where he, you know, where he can help sort of, he can help the Hawks in that regard more so than Dorsey, you know, who just for me is not an NBA caliber player at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not super high on him either. I do think that, Robinson's sort of a tough sell for me in a lot of ways. I'm not sure what his role would be on this team. And because of that, there is not that incentive to cut a guaranteed contract to keep him. I mean, if Thomas Robinson was still 23, I might see the path there. I would argue that Dorsey might be the guy I would choose to cut if I had to cut someone. I can't imagine that's actually going to happen. I think Daniel Hamilton, even though they just signed him, could be an option for that if they wanted to do it. But at the end of the day, it's more likely that Robinson's not on the team than he actually is on the team. And they need camp bodies. I mean, every year that I've been doing this, they always bring someone in, especially as a big. It was Matt Costello at one point. It was Tyler Cavanaugh at one point. They've had guys around that didn't have a chance to make the team coming out of camp, and they just had them there to have scrimmage possibilities. They only have five bigs. That's an odd number. If you want to split up teams, you need more than that. So, you know, having six now, there's advantages to that, and I think Robinson has NBA-level talent. Obviously, he was a top-five pick, but at the same time, I think he's not going to be on the team. That's just a guess of mine. But since it just happened this week, I wanted to at least ask you about that, even though it's not the most important thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine there's an 80% chance that he's not on the team, and then the last 20 would be split between Dorsey perhaps being cut, maybe Daniel Hamilton, maybe DeAndre Bembry, you know, maybe even Vince Carter. But the way Vince has been sort
that's
of out
happening.
In the media, yeah. I don't think he's, you know, I think he's going to be on this team at least through, you know, maybe December, January, February. You know, maybe he gets bought out in March and sort of moves on to the TV career that he's, you know, obviously trumpeting. So, you know, we'll see, but I don't think Vince will be cut before the season starts.
Yeah, there are a few guys that are expiring that if they suffered an injury of any kind early in the year, like training camp wise, they might be inclined to cut them. They have to pay them because it's all guaranteed contracts, so that wouldn't be a situation like that. But like if Daniel Hamilton was going to be out for 3 months, I mean, that's just an example. You have a guy on a one-year minimum, you probably want the roster spot versus waiting for him to come back, that kind of thing. So
yeah,
same with Dorsey, by the way. Dorsey, I think people have forgotten this. Dorsey, as a second-round pick that they could not sign with cap space, only had a two-year contract. He's actually an expiring contract. He'll be a restricted free agent, so they have control over him.
And he'll only be a restricted free agent if they're willing to give him like $1.8 million.
Yeah,
for next season. And like if they put a qualifying offer in front of him, he might just take that. And I'm not sure that they want to use $1.8 million on Tyler Dorsey. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise. I mean, obviously, for me, it wouldn't surprise me if he were. You know, if this is his last year in the league, I wouldn't surprise me if last year was his last year in the league. It just doesn't. He's not one of my favorite guys, obviously.
Yeah, that's very clear. I'm probably a little bit higher on him than you, but still definitely lower than the consensus in terms of the people around Atlanta. So, all right, we mentioned one guy there in the mix, and that's DeAndre Bembry, who you wrote about this week. That's a good opportunity for you to plug everything that you would like to plug. I know that was an interesting piece. People sort of liked and kind of were surprised, but I think there's a segment of the fan base doesn't necessarily understand all of the option stuff and realize that there's a decision coming up with DeAndre Bembry in the very near future that you wrote about. So please plug that. Anything else that you'd like to?
Yeah, I wrote about on Peachtree Hoops the way the Bembry's options are sort of all rookie scale options are due the year before that they actually are going to happen. So they have to decide on DeAndre Bembry's fourth year option by October 31st of this year. So that's his 19-20 salary is either going to be locked in or not by October 31st, and that's one of the he's one of the very few first round picks around the league who might see that option declined and might see, you know, himself become an unrestricted free agent, you know, this summer rather than being a restricted free agent, you know, in 2020. So that also sort of feeds into the Thomas Robinson discussion in that if they decline the option, if they know they're going to decline the option before the season starts, maybe they just cut bait with Bembry altogether, keep Robinson as the 15th guy. It's very unlikely that they go that route, I think. And I, you know, if Bembry can show any level of improvement or just stay healthy through camp and through the first 2 weeks of the season, then I think they'll pick up that option because, you know, their cap space, you know, that extra, you know, about $2.5 million, maybe $3 million in cap space isn't really worth, you know, it's not, they don't really need that extra, the extra cap space that it would take to get rid of him. It's really more of the roster spot concerns. And because they've got, you know, a handful of expiring contracts on their books for this year, I don't think that's going to be, you know, as necessary for the summer of 2019. So I don't expect that he'll be declined, but if he is, then he would be one to watch to get cut before the season starts, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just very little incentive to keep a guy around if you're not going to keep his option, as you write about in the piece, as you say there. So something to keep an eye on there and something to read at Peachtree Hoops. There's lots of content. I know it's late August, but we had a couple of pieces up today, you know, 3-4 pieces because of all the news that hit. And it was a mock draft floating around from ESPN that we wrote about a little bit. So there's plenty to get to. And then also check out Jeff's site, Early Bird Writes. Where else are you writing now? Forbes and Dime and all these places, man. You're everywhere.
Yeah, I'm all over the place. Early Bird Writes is where you want to find all of your salary cap information, everything on all 30 teams, you know, pick breakdowns, everything is up there. I write at Forbes, Dime. If you like the Cleveland Cavaliers, I'm over at Fear the Sword, which might impact a little bit of why I'm a little higher on them, because I'm also watching them every night, so I've got a little bit of a connection there. Blazers Edge, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think that's everything for right now.
for now.
Stay tuned. There's going to be movement between now and the start of the season in one way or the other, so we'll see, but for right now, I think those are the 6 sites that I'm working for right now.
Only 6. That's unfortunate, Jeff.
Yeah, whatever. Yes. You know, I got to work a little harder, I guess.
All right, man. Well, thank you for joining me, as always. Please follow Jeff on Twitter and all those places that he just mentioned. As for everybody else, please subscribe to the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, Spotify. You might have noticed that I've been tweeting out links from my personal account and also the Locked On Hawks Twitter account from Megaphone, which is our host platform. And those actually conveniently allow you to click through and link directly to a number of podcast platforms that you can subscribe from. So that should make it a little bit easier for you guys if you want to have that just pop up in your feed in the future. Please check that out, as well as the fact that the Locked On Network has just launched an entire college network. So if you have a college team, if you're an alum somewhere, or if you just like a particular program, we should probably have that in the near future if we don't already. So check that out as well. Thanks again, Jeff. I really appreciate it, man. We'll do it again very, very soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Stay tuned, everybody. Probably no podcast until after the weekend, and considering it's a holiday and I'll be traveling, but we'll see you guys next week.